He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to today's Best Stocks, Best Inverse Funds Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, on this first day of November and the day before the big announcement, which could be market moving one way or another. We'll talk a little bit about that. What do we expect the Fed to say tomorrow? Will it impact the markets? Yes. No matter what they say is going to impact the markets. Right now, the Dow is down 33 points, tiptoeing its way the day before the big announcement. It was up, but it's given up those gains. The S&P's up a couple of points. The Nasdaq's hanging on to a 6-point gain so far. Crude oil is having a big day. Crude is up $2.12 today, $88.65. Like I say, President Biden's going to have to raise his limit order of 65 to 72 with crude at almost $90 right now. Gold's up $13.50 per ounce. Silver's up 69 cents. And the 10-year is actually backing off today. 8 basis points, and we'll get Barry's comments on that in a minute here on what the bond market is telling us. It's down 8 basis points to 3.99, and Bitcoin is down 852 to 20,389. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. What will it be during the month of November? October ended up being a pretty good month. Better than most expected. You know, the Fed never backed off in October. In fact, if anything, they became more hawkish during that period of time. Earnings season, C minus so far from my watching of the earnings come in. I think there was a lot of short covering during the month of October when, better than expected news came out and everybody would scramble. There were some rumors of the Fed getting more dovish, and pivoting, to a dovish December. What are we wishing for, a dovish December? Is that, a partridge in a pear tree? what is the bond? How come interest rates are down?
Yeah, I mean, we've had a couple of softer economic numbers. About the only thing you can kind of look at today, ISM manufacturing, job openings actually increased. I don't know if it's funny if that's good or bad. Of course, I guess it's good that they need the jobs, but the fact that they're that they can't fill them is also a bit bad as well. I mean, we had construction spending today was up 0.2% in September. I think the previous was minus 0.6. So that's, tad bit, some of the economics are a little bit mixed. That could be, partially why. You've got the 10-year down a bit. Of course, we've got the big Fed decision tomorrow. I think we're pretty much counting on a 75 basis point increase, which is going to take us into that, 3.75 to 4 range on the Fed funds rate. And I don't know about you, but a lot of the big wirehouses I've seen are kind of in that 5% Fed funds rate, which means, that after tomorrow we've got, at least a percent and a quarter to go. It just depends on, how we get there, I think.
Yeah. Will it be 250s and a 25 or, I'll see you and raise you by 275s and a, let's see, would 375, no, a quarter and a point. Okay, so that would be
75 and a 50 would
get us there. A 75 and a 50.
Right? Yeah.
Or 250s and a 25. If it's 250s and a 25, the market probably rallies tomorrow. My guess is, seeing how there is a big midterm election on Tuesday, less than a week away, I think that he's going to come out with a little bit of a dovish tilt to what he has to say tomorrow, so as not to have any impact. I mean, if he comes out like he did at Jackson Hole, I don't think that's going to happen. I think there's going to be a little backing off from that, the Grinch that stole the summer rally. So that's just my guess. I don't think he's going to be real tough tomorrow. Maybe backing off, which would be favorable for the market in the short term. Okay, then the market's going to start looking ahead to the election. Will there be, it seems like almost a given that the GOP is going to take back the House, and it seems to be kind of a flip of a coin whether or not they take back the Senate. And then you've got gridlock, which the market likes. So, you could see some days ahead that could be fairly decent. Now, if he comes out like Jackson Hole, which I don't expect, you're going to see a big sell-off. Because this rally over the last week, it ended yesterday, and it's kind of coming to an end again today. But we had a pretty good six-day rally. And it was built on the article by the Wall Street Journal that the Fed's going to become more dovish. And that sent the market really rallying big time over the last 6 days. And then, of course, yesterday the author of that article backed down. He's supposedly in the know. What do they call him? The Fed Whisperer.
The Fed Whisperer.
Yes. Okay.
In normal stock world, we call that insider trading.
I could just see a guy, outside the door of the conference room with his ear up against the door trying to hear what the Fed is saying. Well, you know what? He's now kind of backing off of his previous comments that really sparked the rally. There is a deal today, A Biomed, which is really good stock over the years. I mean, it's not the momentum stock that it once was, but they make medical devices designed to assist or replace the pumping function of the heart. A Biomed was about a $15 billion medical device company. Johnson & Johnson is going to pay $380 a share. The stock closed yesterday around 260, so that's it's up $126 a share today, or 50%. Well, it's always good to see that deals are still happening. I would rather have owned this stock and announced this news today, but I didn't see it coming. The stock's been pretty flat for the last several months. But there is a deal, and it's J&J. Now, you always want to look at the buying side of this equation. J&J is down 0.5%. Okay, tonight, AMD is going to report. That's probably kind of one of the last of the really big tech stocks that have not reported yet. AMD's results tonight will come out amid gloomy days for the PC market. And it really is. I mean, during the COVID, a lot of people forced to work from home, there was some pretty good activity going on, and new PCs, new servers, new laptops, all kinds of stuff, new screens, etc. But lately, man, it's really turned gloomy. And then you've got the China situation for AMD. I sent out a tweet yesterday. I'm at Bill Gunderson. That chart is really just dead in the water on AMD. Even though it's the best chip stock in the entire market, even the best one looks really, really just ugly. AMD, their earnings have not slowed down, Barry. I mean, they still have some terrific earnings and earnings forecasts going forward, but the stock has gone from $164 down to 60. It's lost over 100 points since last year, and I would just say it's been the shrinkage of the multiple.
Yeah, the PE for sure, and then of course some uncertainty from a legislative risk standpoint, where you had Biden administration refusing to making it illegal to sell certain types of chips to China, really affected NVIDIA more than more than AMD, but that overhang is also kind of out there. But yeah, you look at the PE ratio of 16.5.
Yeah.
That's a forward PE of 16.5. That PE was probably, you know, 29-ish or so, I'd say, probably early in the year, if not a bit higher. So yeah, I mean, really, the E hasn't really changed much, if anything.
No.
It's gone up, but how much folks will pay for those earnings has decreased significantly.
And this all, you know, plays into what we've been saying about rising interest rates affect the PE multiples of stocks, and of course also has a big effect on the bond market and bond funds. And I still wouldn't be a buyer of AMD just because I like a little momentum, and there is nothing going on right now in that chart. Okay, this is Bill Gunderson and Barry Kite. We'll be right back to talk about some energy stories today. Welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks, Best Inverse Funds Now show. The market kind of going south here. The Dow now down 87. It was up all morning. The futures were. It opened to the upside, but now turning south. S&P down 5. NASDAQ down 14. Maybe somebody had said something here during this show, since we started the show, about what they expect from the Fed tomorrow. Devon Energy will also report tonight. Now, there's a tale of two stocks. Okay, you've got one, AMD, which is a tech stock. And, of course, you've got the NASDAQ down about 30% so far this year. This has been a terrible year for tech. And, of course, the biggest reason, tech's earnings have not really been hit that much, except for some exceptions there with Amazon and Meta, Google, a few others. But their multiples had the most room to shrink, okay? A 500-pound person's going to lose weight faster than a person that weighs 120 pounds. That's just math. And when that PE multiple contracts, it's going to have its biggest effect on the highest PE stocks. Now, you go to the other side of the equation, and let's just say it wasn't a bullish environment for energy stocks. I mean, when energy stocks started the year, they had much lower PE multiples to begin with. So they started out with an advantage in a rising interest rate environment. I mean, look at Devon Energy. It currently has a PE of 11, and the stock is up since the beginning of the year. They have the benefit of two things going for them in the energy sector. One, they were low PE stocks to begin with. And two, their earnings situation, their earnings picture has greatly improved. You know, that's all we can hear lately is how much these energy stocks are making and how can we punish them with a windfall profits tax because of the good fortune that they've had here with, you know, a couple of things going in their direction. So if
with
you look
the tax, at tax, they can, you know, Biden will be able to afford to pay a higher higher price for the barrel of oil to refill the strategic petroleum reserve.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Devon Energy's last four quarters. Now, they're going to report after the market closed tonight. Their earnings have been up 225%, 234%, 86%, and 133%. And a lot of that rise, it's not because demand has surged. Oh, it has somewhat. I mean, from the COVID days, obviously demand has surged. And people are definitely traveling a little more and taking vacations, but it's more of a supply issue. And it really kind of begins at the Nord Stream pipeline in Europe, okay, which is now out of commission. And, you know, the various policies that Europe has taken over the and put forth and followed over the last several years, which has made it very difficult to extract oil out of the ground, natural gas out of the ground, and the pipeline situation is another big the pipeline. We don't have the pipeline capacity to meet the demand. Eversource today, a New England utility. Okay, now we're hearing about running out of gas in Europe. And what if the winter is really bad? Well, Eversource, a New England utility, has urged President Biden to use emergency authority to protect against a potential natural gas shortage in the region this winter. Now, we just heard that they completely blocked the pipeline coming from West Virginia, which would have came down the East Coast, which Joe Manchin had been lobbying hard for. And finally, from what I could tell, that was why he voted for the big Inflation Reduction Act, because he was going to get his pipeline. And then they turned around and reneged on the thing. And now you've got New England wondering if they'll have enough gas to meet the power supply needs for the region in the event of a severe cold spell this winter. Now, I don't know what emergency authority that President Biden has that could reverse this situation, but the CEO of Eversource says that they just completed their annual winter reliability assessment. He cautioned that New England's power grid remains particularly vulnerable to severe cold due to the region's limited natural gas pipeline capacity. Okay, this is a supply problem. It's not that all of a sudden we're going to have this freezing winter and the demand's going to surge. It's the capacity that is the issue here, the supply. So anyways, you've got a real problem there. We'll see what happens. Natural gas future prices near Boston for the winter had surged 38% from last winter. And, of course, that's all part of the inflation issue. Well, that's a big problem, okay? Wall Street experienced its first week of equity outflows after 8 weeks. That was last week. There were outflows out of the ETFs, et cetera. Not sure why, what the catalyst was, other than the Fed probably is the biggest catalyst. And I would say also fear of recession. You know, we've been talking, Barry, about the inverted yield curve, even getting down to where the really short-term notes, 5% on a really short-term note, which is way more than the 4% that you can get on a 10-year note, which is really pointing to a recession. And, of course, that's another big factor that the Fed has to look at. Do you think the Fed at this point, would they place inflation over recession? I mean, on the one hand, they got to get inflation under control, and
well, from a mandate standpoint, right? I mean, it's essentially a dual mandate. It's inflation. It's employment, right? And the employment picture looks probably, at least on an unemployment number standpoint, lowest, that it's really ever been. And then, on the inflation side, that's the piece that they've got to get right, right? And so, I see them, continuing to fight that side. Of course, at some point, right, those job numbers, you would imagine that you would get a tick up in unemployment. But, they usually run unemployment around 4%, right? 4.25%. That's kind of the old full employment rate. And we're at, I think last time I checked, we're in that 3.4, 3.8 range. So.
Yep. Well, Mohammed Al-Erian says the chances of a soft landing, meaning the Fed is just going to glide us into this beautiful soft landing without any turbulence, without any bumps in the road at all, he says the odds of a soft landing are meager, meaning, they've got to be more concerned about inflation right now than putting the economy into a recession. Okay, well, we got a lot of individual companies to talk about when we come back. Any that have reported earnings, big bellwether stocks. This is Bill Gunderson and Barry Kite. We'll be right back. back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks, Best Inverse Funds Now show with Bill Gunderson and Barry Kite. Those appointments are filling up. I'm really surprised, Barry. I mean, there must still be some demand to talk to Bill and Barry down there in Sarasota. I told the Edie, hey, I'll stay an extra day if needs be, and if we got to schedule some evenings, whatever. You know, I want to help as many people that I can while we are down there. So you can call Edie at 855-611-BEST, 855-611-BEST. She says, Bill, should I schedule a lunch break? I said, heck no, Edie. Maybe Barry's going to need a lunch break, but I don't need them.
Well, depending on what the bite is down there, you might have to stay a couple extra days.
Come on. I want to help folks. All right, so if you want to meet with us, we probably won't be back until, I don't know, February, March of next year. 855-611-BEST. Now, I did not do a newsletter this past weekend, but on the earnings front, there really was little change in the earnings picture for next year and the year after that. 71% of the S&P 500 companies have beat their earnings estimates, which is about average, a little bit below average maybe. The earnings growth rate for the S&P right now versus the same quarter last year is a meager 2.2%. So there's been no movement. In other words, earnings have come in about where expected so far, maybe a little bit to the downside. I continue to give this earnings season a C-. We'll have a lot more evidence this week. By the time this week is over, there may be some movement one way or another by this week. If this quarter goes negative versus the same quarter last year, that wouldn't be a good development. The forward PE ratio right now on the S&P is 16.3. We started the year at 23, all the way down to 16.3. Okay, the big story here, one of the big stories has been these oil profits. You have Marathon Petroleum today, MPC, having a blowout quarter, $7.81 in earnings, beats by 78 cents. Revenue beats by $6.5 billion. That's a refinery company. Phillips 66, which is similar to Marathon, they beat by $6.46. No, $1.43 they beat by. And then, of course, you had BP report. They beat by 64 cents. And they announced, okay, this is going to draw the ire of the administration. They announced a $2.5 billion buyback. And we've heard the administration, current administration, saying don't be going and giving people dividends now and don't be doing stock buybacks. You know, you should refund that money to the consumers.
Get a drone and drop it on like a, we need like a, what, a dollar ball drop or something?
Yeah, exactly. Well, Biden poised to float a windfall tax on the energy producers. Is that a good idea? Well, I just saw a tweet by Lawrence Summers, who, you know, I believe he was Obama in the Obama administration. I mean, he comes from the left side of the aisle. He's a well-respected economist. I want to say he's a Harvard guy. He says, just a few moments ago, he says, I don't understand the argument for a windfall profits tax on energy companies. If you reduce profitability, you will discourage investment, which is the opposite of your objective. You want continued investment in oil and gas production. Otherwise, you're going to reach the problems that Europe has. And we, unfortunately, are not going in that direction. Summers goes on to say, if it is a fairness argument, I don't quite follow that logic, since even with the windfalls, Exxon has underperformed the overall market over the last 5 years. I can just say, as a guy who watches individual stocks for the last 23 years, energy stocks are chronic underperformers. I can't remember the last time. In fact, I think you got to go back to 06, 07, somewhere in there where the energy stocks really did well. You know, we've been talking about a lot of these Baker Hughes and these equipment companies that have lost money for the last 6-7 years in a row. They're finally having a profitable year. And, you know, we want to slap windfall taxes on them when we need more natural gas to get through the winter in New England, when the diesel supplies are at a critical level right now. So, I don't know, a lot of these wounds that we're experiencing in the world today are self-inflicted. I mean, Europe has self-inflicted the energy crisis that they have today. So that's Larry Summers' two cents. And, you know, I would agree. You have to, even technology. Okay, what if technology stopped investing in new technology? What if the electric vehicle company stopped investing in new ways, battery technology? You got to keep things going. You got to always be looking to the future. And if you're not looking to the future, you can really never rest on your laurels of yesteryear or today. You know, I would think that they would use a lot of those profits that they made to invest in the future and better technologies, cleaner technologies, to meet the demand, especially in areas that are never going to be run by renewable energy. Okay, so we have that. Pfizer, couple of medical stocks in the news today. Of course, Pfizer, a big bellwether. It seems their vaccine sales are slowing considerably. Pfizer got as high as $61 per share. It's now down to $48 per share. And I would also say, Barry, the big drug companies have been severe underperformers over the years. Are we going to penalize Pfizer with windfall profit tax because of what they made off of the COVID, or are we going to encourage them to find new drugs for other ailments going forward? I mean, you just can't pick out one sector say, hey, you know, you're having a really good year. That's not fair. Well, Pfizer had a hell of a year last year, okay? So did Moderna. And I don't think I heard of windfall profit taxes.
The sad thing is when you look at it, right, and you can you know, blatantly, you know, see that it meets, you know, a particular side's agenda, right? In that instance, right, they wanted the vaccine so they could, so you can open up and get the economy going, you know, back going.
Yeah.
In this instance, right, it's... the attack on oil companies is, you know, at least appears to be, right on the surface, largely a political one. And, you know, it's just, I feel like at least in years past prior to, right, it was, you know, it was behind the scenes they may be doing things like this versus, you know, nowadays it's just out in the forefront.
It's out in the forefront. So, yeah, I mean, it just, and I've, you know, there's been CEOs of some of these companies have said, if we don't continue to invest, the results will be catastrophic.
Oh, Chevron's, I think.
Catastrophic.
Go back to Chevron, you know, look at some of the Chevron CEO, some of his interviews in the last, you know, year. I mean, even you can take it back, you know, 2-3 years. He's been calling for the fact that it's been underinvested for an extended period of time. And that's really what it comes down to. I mean, there's numbers that say that, you know, the fossil fuel industry has been underinvested by $3 trillion, and that's kind of what, you know, Summers, I think, is mentioning over the last 10 years. I mean, $3 trillion, I know the budget deficit's at around 31 or so, but $3 trillion is still a lot of money, especially over, you know, that period. And you're not talking about exploration and things that you can just pop up in, you know, 6 months. I mean, these are long-term investments that take a while to pay off. So.
Yep. And, of course, they're investing in carbon capture. I saw today that one of the big oil companies is teaming up with another company to create the largest carbon capture, facility ever in the Permian Basin of Texas. Okay, Pfizer's vaccine sales down 66% year over year. Lilly also reported today. These big pharma, they've been chronic underperformers for years. And I like Lilly. right now. We own Lilly in our premier growth portfolio. It is down 4.4% today, however, on a little bit weaker outlook. I saw natural gas, which has come down hard recently. You know what? There could be a trade there. I think I put it on the trading list yesterday as a potential. UNG is the ETF, but I think you could be seeing a bounce here with these words from this New England utility and it coming down so hard and starting to bounce off its 200-day moving average. Okay, what's moving today? That and more when we come back.
You gotta go where you wanna go and do what you wanna do.
And welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. Let's just get a quick update here on the markets on this day before the big announcement by the Fed. Everybody expecting a 75 basis point hike tomorrow, but it's really about what they say going forward. I think there's probably another 75 basis point hike coming after that, but I think Powell may use some soft words tomorrow just because, you know, with the election less than a week away, not wanting to rock the boat. S&P down 16 right now. The Dow is down 161. The NASDAQ is down 62. And like I say, I mean, last week's big rally was built on that article from the Wall Street Journal that said that they're going to become less hawkish and more dovish in December. And the market celebrated and took off. And then yesterday that story, it wasn't retracted, but basically, you know, well, you know what, we're tempered. It was tempered a lot yesterday. Maybe that's not going to happen, they said. So now you've got 2 days of down in the market. And the oil stocks are having a good day today. They are in the crosshairs right now of conversation and debate. You can look back to the crude oil windfall profit tax of 1980, which was enacted under the Carter administration. It generated $80 billion in gross revenues over the next 8 years, which is really a pittance, okay? $10 billion a year for 8 years.
Yeah, I guess that was a lot of money back then.
Maybe.
But yeah, nowadays.
I mean, that's not even spitting in the ocean today. Before being repealed by President Reagan, U.S. crude production during that period of time, those 8 years, was declined as much as 8% over that period of time. And the country, Congress, started getting very worried that we had increased the nation's dependence on imported oil. Well, we see that that didn't work out so good for Germany and the rest of Europe when they became dependent upon Putin's oil. Not completely dependent, but dependent in a big way on Putin's oil. And you've seen, you know, with when we face shortages and rising prices, instead of turning to Texas and Louisiana, we're turning to Venezuela and Iran. And it just doesn't make sense. Well, here we are. President Biden has made a statement. He says the oil industry has a choice. Either invest in America by lowering prices for consumers at the pump and increasing production and refining capacity. Well, I mean, that just goes against business. You don't lower prices, and raising the taxes on these companies is not going to make them lower costs and produce more.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, that, it's just bad economics. I mean,
it's
just,
completely
it never works. It's
upside down.
It might sound great rhetoric-wise, but in you know the, when you look at the math, I mean, you just gave an example from you know how it's worked in the past in the 80s. It didn't work.
No, it didn't work, and I was there sitting in lines. I used to commute to work about 45 minutes, 50 minutes each way, and I'd have to plan an extra hours on several days to wait in line because it was an odd day or an even day, And I could get gas on that day, which we don't want to go back to that. But, you know, there is an element out there that wants us to go back to that. So we're forced into electric vehicles where there's no infrastructure yet and where electric vehicles cost a whole heck of a lot more than the regular ones. There's not a solution yet there. Okay, some stocks on the move today. Oil. It's the oil stocks. These controversial stocks are doing well today. Baker Hughes, for instance, BKR. BKR is up. It's breaking out today. It's up 2.2%. This continues to be the number one sector in the market. Not so much the oil producers, but the people that provide the equipment, the services, the drilling, the contract, the picks and shovel companies. BKR has been around for a long time. They're hitting a new high today, up 2.2%. I've also noticed some pretty good activity in the Canadian oil companies. SU, which is Suncor, it's breaking out today a little bit. It's up 2%. And IMO was another one. I think they reported earnings yesterday. That one's having a nice breakout today, IMO, which is Canadian. But they're teamed up with a lot of U.S. companies. And, in fact, in some cases, I want to say IMO is like the Canadian arm of Exxon or one of those big ones. Equinor has kind of been perking up here recently. EQNR, which is the big Norwegian oil company, it's had a nice run. It's breaking out a little bit here today. It's up almost 2%, Equinor, the Norwegian oil company. $122 billion. It's one of the biggest oil companies that most people have never heard of. Equinor also pays a dividend yield of 1.7%. Is there any non-oil companies doing well today? Yeah, there's one, Corteva. CTVA is the company that was spun off by DuPont. Fertilizer company. I think they've been helped by the big drop in natural gas, too, recently. And let's not forget the wheat. The wheat that is not going to be shipped around the world. That means the rest of the world is going to have to step up to the plate if the environmentalists will let them and get the land ready, fertilize the crops for a big wheat harvest. And it's probably, a springtime is when they need to plant. But that should be pretty bullish, the wheat deal going south. And it's not just wheat, it's other crops too, like corn, soybeans, etc. That's going to put more pressure on fertilizer prices. And right now, Corteva, CTVA, is one of the best-looking fertilizer stocks. Okay, well, we're out of time. We will be updating the earnings. I think by Friday, we're going to have a really good look into next year and the following year, but we always have to worry about inflation continuing. We'll get word on that from the Fed tomorrow. And we also have to worry about recession and what that would do to the consumer, who continues to drive the economy. But the consumer is getting squeezed right now. If you'd like to talk to us about money management or make an appointment with us via Zoom or telephone, 855-611-BEST or Gunderson Capital. com. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.